In a First Presidency message, President Gordon B. Hinckley stated, "The Book of Mormon narrative is a chronicle of nations long since gone, but in its descriptions of the problems of today's society, it is as current as the morning newspaper and much more definitive, inspired, and inspiring concerning the solutions of those problems."
If we take the most fundamental and the key prophetic events of the latter days, and we organize them in a time-ordered fashion, and then we take this model and we lay out the Book of Mormon history on top of it, we find something incredible, something that gives clear evidence, in my opinion, that Mormon and Moroni truly saw our day, and they understood our history far better than we do.
I know with my whole heart that the Book of Mormon is the protection that President Ezra Taft Benson promised us it would be.
I have said to many people that a person will come to be better informed regarding what's happening in the world today by reading the Book of Mormon than all the magazines and newspapers combined.
He didn't mention podcasts.
This is Infants on Thrones. Philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Okay, I gotta admit it. I have been super excited about this one. So here's the backstory. Sometime around September 2012, I came across a YouTube video that was advertising an upcoming documentary called The Book of Mormon for Our Day, produced by a group called the Joseph Smith Foundation. Now, this documentary lists 19 parallels between the Book of Mormon and our modern times, and it claims that this is the way that we can best understand our historical past, our present, and our future.
It is our roadmap. Everything that the Nephites and the Jaredites went through, we are now going through. We have already gone through.
Now, this premise grabbed hold of me immediately. I found it fascinating, extreme, sensational, crazy, compelling, and incredibly worthy. Worthy of criticism and mockery. So I contacted the Joseph Smith Foundation, and I put my name on a waiting list. And just a week ago, they finally emailed me that the video had been completed. So I ordered it, and it has already been well worth the $20 I plunked down for it.
The Book of Mormon is our only hope for survival of what's going to happen in the last days.
And you know, as I watched this, it was like I was watching a bizarro version of myself, because as ridiculous and mockworthy as this documentary is, this very well could have been me doing something like this. At one point in my life, I was well on the path to believing and teaching these kinds of things. And with my amateurish interest in production, editing, and podcasting, I could have very well gone down this road. And I'm so glad that I didn't. I'm Glenn Ostlund. And today on Infants on Thrones, I'm joined by Jesse.
And you guys will have to let me know if there's any problems with my audio.
Randy.
I plugged in my headphones and it's not working. Hold on.
And Tom.
Have you tried taking the jack out of the little plug there and putting it firmly in your ass?
To discuss and mock the documentary, The Book of Mormon for Our Day.
People are always asking the question, well, what are the signs of the times? What's going to happen? How is this supposed to take place? Or which comes first and which comes second? Well, the Book of Mormon is the answer to all of those questions. The Book of Mormon is the pattern of the last days.
The prophet Mormon was tasked with abridging a history of his people, pulling out the items with direct and specific application to our day. Joining the two together, the signs of the times with the Book of Mormon events, would it not make sense that the two would be very similar? From our studies, we have been astonished with how very similar they are.
All right, so where do you guys want to start with this?
Well, I thought at the beginning that they made actually a pretty valid point about...
What?
let's get this one out of the way. So
okay,
the Book of Mormon itself does say, you know, that it's supposed to be a guide for our times, and that there is this strain of thought within Mormonism that the Book of Mormon is, you know, we're supposed to liken the scriptures unto ourselves. There were some lessons in there that we were supposed to learn. And I think a lot of Mormons overlook that. It's important because there's a lot of crazy stuff that's in the Book of Mormon that if you apply it to our times, well, the result, I guess, is this video. But it just doesn't make any sense.
I don't know that I'm really following what you're saying. The statement when they say that the Book of Mormon was written for our day,
yeah,
you're agreeing with that?
No, I'm saying I appreciate their application of that idea to the practical details of what's in the Book of Mormon. So if you think the Book of Mormon is this voice from the dust, that it's written for our day, which Mormons do, then at some point it would seem important to actually get into the specifics of what that means, which is exactly what this video does.
So what you're saying is that these guys are actually taking the claims about the Book of Mormon seriously and not just kind of superficially like what you normally see at church.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a much more succinct way to put it.
Did any of you guys notice the B-roll that the different B-rolls that they kept using? So if any of our listeners aren't familiar with the term, a B-roll is like, just stock footage that they would insert when they're talking about something. So if somebody were talking about obesity, they'd show, you know, a zoomed up shot of like somebody's walking down the street or something like that. Well, in this, they're talking about defending their liberties in the Book of Mormon. And then it like immediately snaps to like the rotor blades on an Apache helicopter like that are firing up. And it's just all of their B-roll that they used was so inflammatory. Like it's I think that goes to what you're saying about the production of it, that they just made it as so much of it was over the top.
Or like incredibly naive, because when they were talking about the, I don't remember exactly the words that they used, but just the problems in the latter days, they're showing kids on skateboards.
Oh yeah.
That was a weird shot.
Get off my lawn.
But if you're going to get B-roll, if you're talking about moral degradation and you have to pick some 3-second shot, why would you go to the skate park?
No.
I mean, that just doesn't even make sense.
No, show Howard Stern. we'll start working now towards what these specific parallels are, because their thesis.
Should we hurry and talk about like who did this? Like who are the Stoddards?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Because I was looking at their bios. I'm looking at it right now. James F. Stoddard III is the husband of Leslie Stoddard, father of 9 children, dude. So he's taking this stuff serious, literal.
Yeah.
Multiply and replenish.
And even in the movie, this is the one thing that bothered me. It's like their resume or their bio wasn't broad enough or specific enough. So it always said that they were a direct descendant of whoever, like Azrael or Mary Smith or... And then one of them said that he was a direct descendant of Joseph Smith. I'm like, how does that lend him credibility again?
Yeah, actually, I'm looking at the same thing you are, Tom. So he's a descendant of Asel Smith.
Asel and Mary Smith, yeah.
Yeah, and guess what? So am I. So I guess we have the same. I guess we have the same credibility. Yeah.
Yeah, we should have been leading our entire podcast with Jesse.
Oh man,
this direct descendant of Asel and Mary Smith. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh.
So you guys are like cousins, huh? You and
who was Asel? That was Joseph's grandfather.
Father. Okay. Joseph Senior's father. Yeah. So.
Neat.
So okay. Neat. So we have this James Stoddard III, who seems to be like the biggest running head in this DVD, right? He's like the director.
Yeah.
And then there's the 16 or 19 year old blonde that's a Stoddard.
Yeah.
She's
so amazed by everything because it's incredible.
I mean, she's fairly attractive, but come on, Randy. I mean, how old do you think it doesn't say how old she is, but it says that
she looked like she was 21. And my favorite quote from her was that when we looked for
the research that we did
from our studies, we were astonished at what we found.
Yeah.
You're easily impressed.
I've got to say that my favorite credential was Von H. Hansen. And I mean, I love that they go the general authority route with the middle initial.
I do too. I love it.
Von H. Hansen, who is a providential history researcher, home and private educator.
He's a homeschooler.
Or a home teacher.
Yeah, or a home teacher. I hadn't even thought of that.
He's a homeschooler. And do you know what providential history research is? I Googled it.
What is it?
It's the historical perspective that God is putting things into place for a reason. You know,
obviously.
The only two guys that seemed like they had any real credibility to me is freaking Rod Meldrum, which, man, they needed more of him on there. That guy is a circus sideshow all in and of himself. I love that guy. If I could get that guy's autograph, I totally, totally would. Signing, you know, if you could get like a picture of the United States with the gold plates in the middle and have Rod Meldrum sign that, that'd be perfect. Then they had the emeritus, Hartman Rector Jr.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Wasn't there a token PhD thrown in there?
There was somebody that had a PhD.
There were a few that had PhDs.
Yeah, there was a there was that female BYU professor you're talking about.
She was
about,
not right? a professor.
Assistant.
She was an adjunct.
Yeah, adjunct. She's a, associate. She's
a I thought she was the blonde you were referring to.
Really?
No, you're thinking that Jeanette Erickson, Jeanette J. Erickson is the BYU associate professor. But L. Hannah Stoddard is the one that Tom's got a crush on. So
not so much.
Well, we can replay it. But
we're recording this?
So then we've talked a little bit about who these people are, what they're trying to do. They're trying to show us that the Book of Mormon is the what's the quote from Ezra Taft Benson that
As current as the morning newspaper.
Yeah, right.
That's more relevant for the newspaper.
Wow, that's not hyperbole.
You can learn more about, you know, current day events by reading the Book of Mormon than by all of the magazines and, you know, news articles in the world. That
damn.
And Ezra Taft Benson seems to be the source for a lot of what they're saying.
Oh, he was like the only general authority that they were quoting from with that kind of comical voice of his that they dubbed over.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
That's because Ezra Taft Benson was like the Tea Party of the 60s.
Yeah.
Well, I liked at one point how they did reference Cleon Skousen directly. I mean, this was all, or not all, but I'd say 80% of the ideas that they're talking about here are straight out of the Cleon Skousen, Glenn Beck,
John Birch Society
strain of Mormonism. So if you're not going to, for all the listeners, if you're not going to listen to this video, you can pretty much know what that is by just by that reference.
Well, and the other thing, the overarching theme of this whole video, I mean, isn't the Book of Mormon and the Mormon Church supposed to be the one true church on the face of the earth? And I thought in the background, I could almost faintly hear USA. USA, you know, the whole thing is so United States centric. Would any Mormon outside of the United States have any kind of connection to this message that they're talking about? Everything is about the United States.
Yeah, it was. There's a lot of strong nationalism in the video for sure.
Yeah, they didn't get to the geography, world geography, in the homeschool. Exactly. So there's 19. Parallels, amazing, incredible parallels between the Book of Mormon and modern times. And what I found interesting was of these 19, the last five haven't happened yet. They're all like archetypes of what's supposed to happen. So, I mean, even more pseudo-history than the pseudo-history that we already have. But number...
It's pseudo-future, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Okay, so the first one, they say that the Book of Mormon starts the same way that the founding of our country starts, where there is religious persecution and reformation.
Both the Book of Mormon and the Restoration in our day begin with religious persecution driving Israelite remnants to the Promised Land. These colonizers then found mighty nations based upon the scriptures.
So what did you guys think about that? I mean, they talk about the Puritans coming over to America, and that parallels with Lehi and the family coming
parallels.
Out of Jerusalem. Yeah, it's amazing. It's incredible.
That word parallels, yeah. It's basically a mirror.
Yeah, it's almost exactly the same.
Is it just a coincidence that in both the Book of Mormon and in our day, the righteous are led out to a promised land, that in both free governments are established, making it possible for reestablishing the true church?
Oh my gosh.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, They're amazed that the coincidence, or it's not a coincidence, it's a parallel, that, I mean, what are the odds that the Book of Mormon in Lehi would leave religious persecution and come to, you know, the Americas, the Promised Land, just like the Puritans? And I'm like, this fucking book was written in 1830,
yeah,
like 200 years after the Puritans. What are the odds? I think it was a total plagiarism of the Puritan tale. And they're just amazed that you can't, there's no other explanation for this. There's no other explanation.
Yeah, and that became really apparent to me in point number four about the Jaredites. So we'll talk about that then. But I think to me, as I was watching this, Randy, I was thinking, this is more evidence that the Book of Mormon is a 19th century creation, and that's why you have these so-called parallels, than that, you know, these pre-Columbian Nephites were writing down stuff that they
well,
knew,
and I think,
you know.
I think number two and three are the same way. So number two is the Lehites come to America, and that's compared to the Gentiles coming to America.
Yeah.
And then number three is the laws of Mosiah are compared to the United States Constitution.
Yeah.
The Lord inspires righteous leaders to establish a divinely sanctioned government whereby the people can worship God in liberty.
Both the laws of Mosiah and the constitutional law on this land were brought forth by godly and righteous men through the inspiration of heaven.
I also took exception to them saying a righteous people were led out of Europe. The Puritans, yeah, sure, they left Europe because they weren't able to practice their religion the way they did. So what did they do? They came to America, and then they had the power, and they practiced religious persecution to make sure everyone worshiping exactly the way they wanted to. And they sure didn't take too kindly to the Native Americans. They didn't take very long before they slaughtered an entire tribe.
Yeah, but that was the Native Americans' fault for being wicked Lamanites in the first place.
That's true. You got to blame the victim.
Yeah.
Well, and I like, too, how they kept referencing that, well, you know, the United States is a land that's set apart for God's true followers, that this, as the promised land, that this is, you know, it's going to be preserved for us. So this whole idea of like the super U.S. nationalism with the, you know, the Constitution hanging by a thread and all that, the whole idea is the same, that the Mormons are eventually going to take over the United States and run it, basically. It's kind of sickening in a way, because you think about the history of what actually happened in the U.S. with slavery and all of the just atrocities.
Manifest destiny.
Right.
Religious justification for genocide.
Yeah. And that all of that is all so that we can be here today, so that, you know, to fulfill this promise that was made thousands of years ago in the Book of Mormon, that this was going to be a promised land. I mean, it's just disgusting. It's just,
well,
really.
But it makes sense, though, Jesse, because it had to be that way, because that's the way it was.
Well, now that you put it that way, it does make more sense.
Yeah, because if it would have happened a different way, then it wouldn't have been the way that it was.
That's a great tautology.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. I think I just got a nosebleed from just listening to that.
So point number three, you know, you mentioned that the laws of Mosiah are compared to the United States Constitution. Now, I did not dig into this, but I don't remember ever thinking of the laws of Mosiah being like a constitution. Like, what? Where are the actual parallels? That, like, they say that, like, and everybody nods and goes, "Oh yeah, 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 yeah." But like, what I remember from Mosiah is like serving your fellow man as yourself, and, you know, not running faster than you have strength. I don't know. Is that one of the amendments of the Constitution?
What happened in the Book of Mormon was that Mosiah wanted to make one of his sons a king. And remember, Ammon, Aaron, Omni, and Himner, none of them wanted to be king. And those were his four sons. So from that point on, and it was like probably about 120 BC. I laugh when I'm saying this, like it's a historical event. It's listed in the Book of Mormon as about 120 BC. They establish more of a, you know, they get rid of the monarchy and they establish the rule of the judges. So they have a bunch of elected judges who then make judgments and interpret the law and so forth. So this was written by an American, so he probably had that kind of free society, you know, get rid of, you know, anti-monarchy.
But I mean, like, Mosiah doesn't give them the freedom of speech. He doesn't give them the right to bear arms. You know, I mean, like,
actually,
well,
you're
forgetting the part where King Benjamin instituted the three-fifths clause.
I am.
Right? Didn't he say that Nephites were only three-fifths of a person?
No, that was Lamanites.
Oh, man.
The Lamanites were only three-fifths of a person, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I actually looked up the Core Horse story today just because we'll talk about that later. But
yeah.
When I was reading the Core Horse story, it made it very clear that Core Horse was going around preaching atheism and nihilism. And nobody could do anything about it because the law said that he's free to preach whatever he wants and free to believe whatever he wants.
So they did have freedom of speech.
Yes. Okay. According to Alma chapter 30,
cool.
The law could have no hold on him because they wanted to keep everyone on equal ground and there was no law on what you believed.
Are we confirming the parallel? Because I was with Glenn, I mean, I went through this list and I watched this movie with my wife. And yeah, it's like every single parallel down this list, I'm like, nope, I don't know. No, that's a stretch. Nope. Where the heck did they get that?
Even if I confirm the parallel, this was written by an American in the 19th century. So what are the odds?
Yeah, using history as a template.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense of the republic, you know, that Republican democracy is a good thing. That definitely comes out of the Book of Mormon, but it's not any kind of a comparison to the Constitution in any meaningful way. I mean, there's no supremacy clause in there. It doesn't talk about quartering troops or, yeah. you know, having rights against unlawful search and seizure or anything else that we think of as being in the Constitution. And I'm more bugged about this now than probably I ever was before, because even if you take what they're saying at face value, it's almost worse, because if God were writing the Constitution and the Constitution were this inspired document, the Constitution's great, don't get me wrong, but they really screwed some things up. I mean, there were some really horrible, horrible things in the Constitution that, if that was an inspired document, then it's just wrong.
You expect more out of God than what you see in the Constitution.
Yeah, I'd expect more out of God. Yeah. I'd expect there to not justify slavery, not justify counting black people as 3/5 of a person.
Jesse, if the Constitution was written by God, why would it need 20 some odd amendments? You know, why did we need the Civil Rights Amendment, for Christ's sake? So if the Constitution, I'm just reinforcing your point. If the Constitution was authored by God, God's a shitty writer.
Randy, God just inspires people insofar as they're able to receive it. These people just weren't ready at that time. And so he keeps inspiring, and then people grow, and it's like this stone that's rolling and all the rough edges get worn off.
That's a good post hoc. No, that's an ad hoc.
Okay.
Good ad hoc.
You're welcome. All right, number four, the Jaredite record coming forth to the Nephite people is paralleled to the Book of Mormon golden plates coming forth to the American people.
Same exact story, same exact words. This is a story that's repeating itself. And the parallel goes further. Because what happens in the Nephite account? The Nephites come upon a new book of scripture.
The Jaredite record was a warning to the Nephites. Their record was recorded on gold plates. It was translated by a seer and discovered in or near the Hill Cumorah, known to the Jaredites as the Hill Ramah.
It was written in a language they did not understand that required the tools of the Urim and Thummim and a prophet of God to translate. And they read this story of a people who disobeyed the covenant and lost the blessings and were destroyed. It was a warning to the Nephites.
When you draw parallels that are internal.
I found this one the most fascinating, I think, of all of them, except for maybe
No way.
Well, the Antichrist one's a little more.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
That's my favorite, too. But the Jaredite record, the parallels there are so striking. That you have this group of people that lived on the American continent that were completely destroyed, but they left behind a record written on metal plates in an unintelligible language, but there's a seer there who has the Urim and Thummim, it's the same Urim and Thummim, to translate it and give this history of how Christ visited this people and interacted with this people and led them from the old world to the new world. I mean, it's the template. It's It's the template of the Book of Mormon that's right there, as Randy said, internally within the Book of Mormon. But to me, that doesn't prove anything except another indication that this is a 19th century fiction. And Joseph Smith, he's the same guy who predicted that the record would come from Joseph, son of Joseph. You know, like, oh, that's an amazing prediction. Right.
You know what's an amazing parallel to me is when Gandalf went after, the Harry Balrog?
Potter? Yeah.
No, when Gandalf went after the Balrog, and he was just a lowly gray wizard, mm-hmm. and he fell, and he came out triumphant as a white wizard. And what are the odds that it would parallel Aragorn when he was just a lowly ranger who had this great potential, but he came through the battle and became king of, Gondor?
Oh, don't now pretend like you don't understand that.
What are the odds that you can have a parallel?
Is this Harry Potter? You're making things up again, Randy.
Randy.
A record of scripture is translated by the gift and power of God from gold plates, containing the record and warning of a fallen people who formerly inhabited America, but were destroyed when they ripened in iniquity.
Here we are, fast forward a couple thousand years, same land, same covenant, the same patterns holding true. We have the biblical account as the foundation. We have a new book of scripture that comes forth, translated by a prophet with the help of the Urim and Thummim.
The Book of Mormon similarly is a warning to us today. It was recorded on gold plates, it was translated by Joseph Smith, and discovered in the Hilk Moreh.
And that account is an account of people, again, upon this land, who failed to live the covenant and lost the blessings.
Yeah, okay. Did we beat that one to death enough?
Yes, please. Let's move on.
Number 5, Alma organizes the church, and in modern times, the church is restored.
Did Mormon, while abridging the record, carefully select and highlight the formation of the Church of Christ in the days of Alma and Mosiah to correspond with the establishment of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in this dispensation? What are the similarities in the records?
If we compare the doctrines and the principles that were related by Alma in the organization of the church as found in the Book of Mormon with the principles and the doctrines revealed by the prophet Joseph Smith in the Doctrine and Covenants and elsewhere, we find an incredible match. One after another, they're the very same.
And again, they make the point that the parallels are amazing, that they looked through all of the scriptures, the Bible and the Book of Mormon, and I think they even say the Doctrine and Covenants. And it's just amazing that the organization of the church matches up identically to what it says in the scriptures.
You know, again, I grew up in the church. I haven't heard these, quote, parallels of connections before. I mean, fine, there's like vague similarities. But, I mean, what a reach.
I don't think that's a reach at all. The scriptures are what justified the foundation of the church in the first place. So that they're going to have these offices. Let's call them teachers. Let's call them priests. Let's call them bishops. We've got these scriptures in Alma that talk about how you're baptized. Let's baptize like that, like they say right there in Alma. That's not a coincidence, and it's not amazing. It's common sense. It's just one of those duh moments, but they're in awe over it.
My thought on this one was that the two layered structure of the priesthood, so the Aaronic and the Melchizedek priesthood, is nowhere in the Book of Mormon. So the basic structure, the foundational structure of the priesthood, which is the organizing body of the church, is nowhere and anywhere in the Book of Mormon.
Which,
it doesn't say anything about it.
Which, I mean, if I remember my history right, that two-tiered level of the priesthood was actually a recommendation from Sidney Rigdon.
Right.
So for people who think
and
that
it's
Sidney
a Campbellite
Rigdon,
doctrine.
Yeah, so for people who think that Sidney Rigdon wrote the Book of Mormon, maybe not.
Well, wasn't a collaborative
Sidney
effort?
Was a Campbellite. If it's a Campbellite doctrine, how would that...
It's not in the Book of Mormon.
Oh.
That's what he's saying, is the Campbellite doctrine that came into the church later, but I don't, we can talk about the Rigdon conspiracy later, but the
But yeah, I mean, the whole idea of the church structure, it took them years to develop that. It's not like it was written in the Book of Mormon and they just said, oh, okay, well, that's what we're supposed to do. They made it up as they went along.
Yeah, there was never really like a defined first presidency in Quorum of the 12 in the Book of Mormon. I mean, you've got the 12 disciples, which is just
that we have heard of
the 12 apostles. Oh yeah, that could have been in the sealed portion.
Right.
Thanks,
yes,
Tom.
The sealed portion, definitely.
Yep. Yeah. Word up.
Word up. Okay, number 6. Abinadi is martyred and Joseph Smith is martyred. And this is, they also compared this to Christ. So it's like
yes,
a three-way parallel.
Yes, that was my favorite part.
Martyr. A righteous prophet of God is raised up to teach the true gospel and is martyred for teaching doctrines which have been lost, including the true nature of the Godhead.
If you take the prophet Joseph Smith's martyrdom and then you take the martyrdom of Abinadi and you compare the two, you'll find that they're incredibly similar. And both, additionally, are types of Jesus Christ.
This is the part where my wife finally just threw her hands up and just said, come on. Because that is, I mean, even for my wife, who has a pretty high threshold of tolerance, this quote parallel was so absurd for even her to handle. And, you know, I was just rolling my eyes like, this is about the same as the other ones, isn't it?
The thing that got me about this was when they said that both Abinadi's martyrdom and Joseph Smith's martyrdom were both a model representing what Christ had done. And then they said, the guy said, Joseph, and you've got to insert the clip here, Glenn.
Both the prophet Joseph Smith and Abinadi voluntarily laid down their lives, thus following the example of the Lord Jesus Christ.
And I'm thinking, yeah, willingly, after he emptied his pepper box pistol through the door into a guy's face,
and tried calling for help. And
right.
Tried calling for help through the Masonic code.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah.
Not only that, but Abinadi supposedly was in front of a court and then was tied up. And didn't he get burned to death?
Yes.
Yeah, and he cursed him.
Not exactly the same.
No.
It is, Tom, if you squint your eyes a little bit and look a little bit to the left of it.
True.
You can kind of see.
Yeah.
There's a vague similarity.
And Abinadi was like wearing a diaper in front of the
in front of the leopards.
You've seen that picture, right? Where he's just got
Friedman. It's a Friedman picture.
And John Belushi sitting in front of him eating grapes or something.
It is John Belushi.
Another thing that they said about Abinadi and Joseph Smith is that they were, one of the reasons they were persecuted is because they taught the true nature of God. And
they taught the true nature of the Godhead.
And if you compare what Abinadi says about God in the Book of Mormon, it's Trinitarian, you know, where God and the Son are one and the Holy Ghost are one. I mean, he really hits that hard. And Joseph Smith was teaching about intelligences and Elohim and Jehovah, you know, all these different things. So to me, that does not match up, that they're teaching about the same God. So maybe it's a different true nature of God. I don't know.
This is confirmation bias gone awry. It's just, I mean, the fact that they're just looking at the audience members like, duh, don't you get it? This is so obvious. It's insulting.
This is what I call intellectual pareidolia. You know how you look in the clouds and you see a dog, or you see a face. That's another thing humans like to do, or not like to do. It's what we're wired to do, is to see faces. So what they're doing is they're taking, you know, anything that can be kind of pulled together in some kind of vague pattern with a total biased point of view, and they're making connections that aren't really there.
Okay, so now the fun one. The I think probably the funnest of all of them, number 7, Antichrists deceive the Nephites.
In the Book of Mormon, the prophet Mormon describes the teachings and the accounts of several men who are Antichrist. He's very deliberate in pointing out their names as well as their philosophies that they were advocating and how those philosophies were an attempt to destroy the truth.
Oh yeah, this makes the DVD watchable.
Yeah,
it's so comical, man. It's so, like,
So the Antichrist that they mention in the Book of Mormon time compared to the Antichrist in modern days, we're talking about who are the Antichrist in the Book of Mormon?
Hor-Hor, Sherem, and Nehor.
Hor-Hor, yeah, and yeah.
And then this is compared to.
So.
Say that again.
That's also what Randy named all his kids.
Oh right.
Yes, right. Yeah. If they were born after my crisis of faith, I almost named one of my kids Kimball. That would have been awful. I would have had to rename him.
Yeah.
And the reason why I chose it is because I was so proud of Kimball for getting rid of the ban on priesthood and the blacks. Oh. Anyway, that I have a question for you guys because I didn't do research on this. The Desert Tap Benson lists five dangerous characters with, you know, these are actually real people.
Antichrist, yeah.
Modern-day Antichrist.
Yeah.
In our day, Latter-day prophets have also warned us against the deceptive logic of Antichrist. President Ezra Taft Benson specifically mentioned five men whose ideas are very deceptive and intended to thwart the work of God. He mentions Charles Darwin, Sigmund Freud, Karl Marx, John Keynes, and John Dewey. And as we think about President Benson's warning, we should reflect seriously on why he was so specific in naming those individuals. I believe that he named them because their ideas are so dangerous and also because they are so prevalent.
Darwin, Freud, Marx. Okay, I know those three. But who is John Keynes and John Dewey?
Keynes is an economist.
Yeah, but isn't Dewey the guy that did the Dewey Decimal System? Or am I mixing that up?
No.
I don't think that's the same Dewey. That's evil. That's like, get off my lawn, get out of my library.
None of you looked up those last two names.
John Dewey was a social reformer. He was a philosopher. I'd say he's probably comparable to somebody like Freud. And then Keynes. Keynesianism is the idea that we can influence social policy through making tweaks in the tax code, essentially, or making tweaks in the economic system. So when the government incentivizes marriage by giving a marriage tax deduction, or they incentivize homeownership by giving a, you know, mortgage interest tax deduction, that's Keynesianism.
And that's Antichrist, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, Benson, being the man he was obviously that was among the most evil things of the day, right up there with Marxism and Darwinism. So.
And yeah, Marx. Yeah, he was named too.
And I've got to mention the B-roll again.
Yeah,
the B-roll for this was so awesome because it was literally pictures of these guys on an iPhone that somebody was swiping between. Like, they had a folder on their iPhone that was, you know, the gallery of Antichrists, and they're just let's open that up, and then they're just flipping through it with their finger. Like, they couldn't come up with some better way to show those guys' faces. I mean, it's just comical.
And then to illustrate how dangerous Darwin is, they pulled out this excerpt from Richard Dawkins.
And it was then, when I discovered evolution, when I discovered Darwinism, that I realized there's this magnificently elegant, stunningly elegant explanation, which I didn't quite understand to begin with. When I did understand it, then that finally killed off my remaining religious faith.
And when you look at the prophet Mormon in the Book of Mormon, why was he inspired to specifically mention and warn against the teachings of men like Sherem or Nehor or Korihor? I think the reason is the same, because he knew that the ideas of such men were spiritually destructive and that they would be prevalent in our day.
So Charles Darwin's theories of evolution are destructive to faith.
It's the gateway to atheism, dude.
Yeah.
I could hear Dr. Bradshaw, former BYU biology professor, just facepalming when he saw that. First, when I was at BYU, the biology professors gave deference to the theory of evolution like it was fact, because it is fact. It ties the whole field of biology together, including the medical field and medical research. And there are plenty of intellectual Mormons that understand that the theory of evolution just cannot be denied and you still be taken seriously.
You know, as I went to read about Keynes or Dewey, especially Dewey, he was an Antichrist because he's liberal and he has all these liberal ideas, and I don't remember them off the top of my head, but I was reading them. I thought, oh yeah, I agree with that. You know, so to me, this is a pretty good measuring stick that you could look at and go, all right, how do you feel about what these guys are teaching? And I guess, I don't know, I mean, a believer would say that proves that you're apostate or something like that, that you're following the Korahors and Sherems of the day.
We see whole groups of people being led astray by the false teachings of Korahor, just as we have seen whole groups of us, and in many ways, all of us, led away in part by the false teachings, the same false teachings that Korahor taught.
And when you closely examine the specific ideas of those in the Book of Mormon, Nehor, Korahor, those types of people, and you compare them with the five men that President Benson warned against, you find almost a perfect alignment in the doctrines that they were espousing.
So do you want to talk, Randy, about the parallel then with the teachings of these Book of Mormon Antichrists? Which of the Antichrists in the Book of Mormon taught evolution?
they teach, Korahor gets into, social evolution, which is a bastardization of Darwin's theory of evolution to serve the needs of the elite in the early 20th century, which, you know, led to all kinds of horrible things in Europe.
No gods, no life after death, no ultimate foundation for ethics, no ultimate meaning in life, and no human free will are all deeply connected to an evolutionary perspective. You're here today and you're gone tomorrow, and that's all there is to it.
There is a spiritual battle that is raging, and it always has raged from the beginning of time.
And what a gift had the Book of Mormon to help us guard against those false teachings. What a gift had the Book.
So I guess you could, that's actually kind of a lucky hit there, because Korahor did kind of talk about, a man succeeds based on his own strength, and that's kind of eugenics and social Darwinism.
Okay, number 8. Wicked leaders conspire in the Book of Mormon times compared to communism and socialism in modern days.
If you take the Book of Mormon and you examine it verse by verse, the fourth most important by verse count would be secret combinations. What are secret combinations?
Combinations. Wicked men conspire to take away the freedoms of the righteous using treachery, murder, intrigue, and carefully devised words to stir their followers to extreme hatred against religion and imagined wrongs.
Yeah, this one was good because they were trying to say that the secret combinations in the Book of Mormon were communism and terrorism.
We have moved a long way and are now moving further and more rapidly down the soul-destroying road of socialism.
Elder Bruce R. McConkie, President Ezra Taft Benson, and other church leaders have specified that the arch-secret combination of the latter days, the power that seeks to overthrow the liberty of all lands, is atheistic communism or socialism.
Was this the section where they talk about Amalickiah and the way that he rose to power?
I ask people in the class if they have ever read Machiavelli's The Prince, which was written centuries ago. Machiavelli wrote about how to seek, obtain, and then begin to abuse power. Well, you don't have to read Machiavelli to understand that. You can read about Amalickiah. And it's fascinating how Amalickiah obtained power by trickery, by murder.
Right. That line stood out more than any other line. Because, like, Machiavelli was a real intellectual, and The Prince is an actual, you know, great piece of literature. And he's like, you don't need to read that. You can read the story about Amalickiah. And what's the level of discourse of Amalickiah rose to, for it came to pass, Amalickiah did rise to power using cunning and trickery. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's like, instead, you read that instead of Machiavelli. So why read Shakespeare when you got the Book of Mormon?
It's the Cliff Notes.
Yep. It's the Cliff Notes.
Just summarize it. What happened? Okay, got it. Cunning? All right.
I found that so aesthetically offensive.
And yet consistent with their methodology.
Yeah.
So, okay, anything else with number 8?
Well, I have to say one thing. I give them props for this. They did refrain on showing images of Obama when they were talking about socialism, how it's trying to take over the country.
It probably was left on the editing floor, I'll bet, somewhere.
Because this whole thing is a Tea Party bullshit propaganda.
Oh, totally is. Totally is.
Okay, the next one. The title of Liberty parallels the Constitution. Again.
Captain Moroni, dude. That guy was awesome.
Wouldn't the title of Liberty be more of a parallel to the Declaration of Independence?
Yeah, probably. Yes.
Aren't you just splitting hairs? Aren't they essentially the same thing?
I'm splitting nose hairs.
No, they're completely different.
The Constitution doesn't have the word God in it anywhere, but the Declaration of Independence does, and so does the title of Liberty. So you got a point there, Glenn.
Yeah, and didn't George Washington like rip off his shirt and write it on there or something, or like his battle coat, something like that, and then said, "I can't tell." I don't know.
Yeah, it was when he was on that boat and he just ripped his shirt off.
Right.
Delaware. Yeah. On Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Okay, number 10, astonishing church growth.
The church grows as apostasy increases. The truly faithful are persecuted, and the prophetic leadership strives to teach true doctrines and regulate the church.
In our own day, in recent years, we've seen incredible church growth. Growth that has amazed the world and even those of us in the church.
And the gospel continues to grow. We are at 14 million plus now.
Bullshit.
And the astonishing church growth, was that like the Alma and the Sons of Mosiah going out as missionaries, converting Lamoni, chopping off arms?
Mm-hmm. I told my wife, I was like, they have a graph, so you know it's real.
They had
that little graph.
Right. They had the line graph.
The Berlin Wall falling and the Nephites opening up trade.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because along with the trade was the missionaries being able to go in and spread the gospel.
I mean, it's back to that same argument that the church is just growing so fast. And I think it was even that L. Hannah Stoddard girl who said, you know, our church is just growing and it's growing faster than anybody anticipated. And it's just this old, it's like a 25-year-old argument that it's just not true anymore. I mean, the church growth has slowed. It's slowed way, way, way down. It's not even it's not even keeping up with the growth of the United States anymore. So as a proportion, the church is actually getting smaller.
At best, it's static.
Right. At best, it's keeping even.
They have so many goddamn kids.
You mean the Stoddard specifically?
And another point I wanted to make about the growth of the church is growth proof of the truth of the group's claims? Because if so, Pentecostals is the true church. Because they started in Arcadia, California in the early 20th century, and they're kicking the Mormon church's ass in growth. They are way bigger than the Mormon church and growing way faster than the Mormon church. So if that's your argument, then you are not the true church.
Blasphemy. You just blasphemed. Okay. So the Nephites degenerate is compared to moderns reject founding moorings. That's a homeschool word.
It's
moorings.
That's a nautical term.
Yeah, okay.
A mooring is a permanent anchor.
Yeah, and to me, that speaks to Fox News right there, always decrying that we're getting away from the pure founding principles of our pure founding fathers. I mean, basically, this whole video is the Book of Mormon proves that the Republican Party is the one true party.
Well, I think this is the same. This is essentially the same point as number 14, which is basically that there's these signs of the time that society's becoming more and more evil, and that's a sign of things to come.
Except that 14 is talking about the physical signs, so that's when they talk about
earthquakes,
Katrina,
and
you know, stuff like that. But
okay,
yeah,
is that when that one professional homeschooler woman came on and talked about the lost tribes, and then they had the map with all the red arrows?
No, that was a Brother Jake video.
Hi, I'm Brother Jake.
Was it?
No.
Okay.
Number 12 is Lamanite religious freedom.
Okay.
And then the walls come down.
This is the one that I was thinking of with the globalization.
Yeah.
Where they're talking about the free trade that starts happening within the Book of Mormon and how how great that was for expanding, you know, the teachings of the book of, or the teachings of the true religion of Christ within the Book of Mormon, and how that's comparable to now how much trade we have going on with the Eastern world. And, you know, after this, after the Cold War, all this stuff. And I'm just sitting there thinking, like, what version of Book of Mormon geography could these people possibly believe in? I mean, if you think that there's these big civilizations that are now suddenly trading with each other that are distant enough that they wouldn't have all had the same stuff anyway, and they're writing down documents, they have a written language. I mean, where could this possibly exist anywhere in the Americas?
Well, it was all destroyed.
Yeah. Including all the evidence that they existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're just asking the wrong questions, Jess. Oh, yeah.
It's just like making my head hurt trying to keep up with them. Yeah. But
see, I'm gonna say that this one is actually a very legitimate parallel, because look, here you go. Samuel the Lamanite stood on a
wall.
And the Berlin wall came crumbling down.
Oh, there it is.
They both have walls.
You can't explain that.
It's astonishing.
They're incredibly similar.
What are the odds?
Nobody can make up stuff like that.
Oh, man, that's compelling.
Yeah. Number 13, combinations infiltrate Nephites compared with complicity in America.
We just keep going back to the same thing, that socialism is taking over the country and we got to fight against it.
But it's not, because this is number 13 and that was number 8.
So they have different numbers.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, number 14, signs warn the Nephites, signs warn the moderns. We talked about that one. It's kind of physical.
Yeah, but earthy it's stuff. Like, there will be an increase in earthquakes and floods.
Yeah.
And just, uh-huh. All this general stuff that always happens all over the world all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be more natural calamities.
Yeah.
Watch out.
Yeah. Yep. It's just because God wants people to be paying attention. So pay attention. And especially pay attention to these last five, because this is what's ahead of us now. You know, we've covered everything that has actually happened. Now, the more wicked part of the Nephites are destroyed. And that's compared to the earth being cleansed. The wicked are going to be cleansed off of the earth. And there will be a small group of righteous people that are saved.
Yeah, so this is drawing parallels to the pseudo-future.
Yeah.
It's like, now they're drawing parallels to things that haven't even happened.
Mm-hmm. But it's amazing that it will. Because the Book of Mormon tells us that it will.
Check and mate again.
Yeah.
I'll say this: as soon as any of these five things happen, I'll change my belief immediately.
It will be
we're
too
recording
late for
that.
You, Jesse.
We recorded that, right?
Yeah.
Do it.
It'll be too late when
it'll be too late. You'll be dead.
You think you're going to be part of this small, select, righteous group that's saved? Not doing Infants on Thrones. Okay. So, sorry, Tom. So
I was just picturing Jesse is, if you guys have seen Terminator 2, right, where the chick's holding the chain link fence and then the bomb goes off and then she turns into a skeleton. She's like, no.
Yeah.
That's what
my
Jesse
face melts off.
Like. Yep. Skeleton holding onto a chain
link. And then you'll wake up in a spirit prison, bitch.
Yeah. And then the spiritual missionaries will come and they'll wipe the spiritual dust off their spiritual feet.
Good.
Okay, number 16, Christ visits the Nephites is identical to the second coming.
This one was so frustrating because Christ visits the Nephites is just the New Testament remixed and inserted into the Book of Mormon. And then now they're saying it's totally plagiarized. And then they're saying, well, that's the same thing as the second coming. And it's not. It's not the same thing as the second coming at all.
But
we don't know that. It hasn't happened yet.
Jesus comes.
And then there's peace.
What was up with the word using the word identical anyways? Like, that was pretty specific.
But it's almost identical. It's almost always almost perfectly identical.
Almost
except for the parts
identical.
That it's not, but it almost perfectly is.
Almost perfectly.
It's a parallel between a fictitious 200-year reign of peace. to a fictitious future prediction of a 1,000-year millennial peace. I mean, how could anyone not be convinced by this?
Yeah.
So, in the end of the millennium, when Satan is allowed for a season,
number 18, Nephites openly rebel. Satan is loose.
Are the rebels at the end of the millennium going to get dark skin cursed again? Because the Book of Mormon is amazingly consistent with God's assholery, because Laman and Lemuel separate from the righteous Nephites, and God immediately shows his colors by making them dark-skinned. And at the time when Christ comes, everyone's white-skinned again. I don't know if you guys remember this. And then when the wicked became wicked again, or when wicked people started to come about 200 years later, once again the skin of darkness curse, God rolled that gem out again. And I'm wondering if...
Yes, the answer to your question,
if they'll become
yes.
darkies.
Yes, yes.
See, I'm going to...
Tanning beds, vanity... Yes,
I'm gonna go with no, because it says that one of the reasons why they were turned dark was so that they wouldn't be enticing under the white
people.
That was
the first dark skin curse. The second dark skin curse, I don't know if they say that.
Well, but still,
in the Book
I think,
of Mormon, everyone was white. All the Lamanites turned white when Christ came.
But if they have that kind of Halle Berry thing going on now, I mean, that's not going to be so bad, right?
She's the perfect color of brown. She's like
right.
Mocha.
Yeah.
You know what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning?
The same thing happens to everything else.
That's like the worst line from a movie ever in X-Men and Storm. Oh, we just watched that the other day. It's terrible.
Is that a Halle Berry quote?
Yeah, she was Storm. Don't you remember?
I don't watch superhero movies. I hate them.
Oh, boy.
Then the last one.
The scriptures teach that following the peace of the millennium, Satan will be loosed and the devil will gather together his armies for one last great conflict. Michael or Adam will gather together his forces as well, and the battle of the great God will commence. How closely this parallels the end of the Book of Mormon, when Mormon leads a final Nephite army.
Mormon leads the final battle in the Book of Mormon, and in modern times, at the end of the millennium, Michael or Adam... They can't make up their mind. We'll lead
same
the final
guy,
battle.
Same guy.
Yeah.
The line I with liked in this one, Glenn, if you can insert the line, was when he said that Mormon and Michael are probably the two greatest generals
in history
of all time.
Yeah, of all time.
Yeah, in all history. Yeah.
Perhaps history's two greatest generals, Mormon and Michael, each leading their host.
I think they're undefeated.
Yeah. It's like two, you know,
I don't think Mormon's undefeated.
Two fictitious characters, one of which has only supposedly fought in battle ever, and Michael, you know, is yet unproven, but he's the greatest
unproven.
General.
Okay, but hang on a second. Let's look at this a little closer. Mormon got his butt kicked. Everybody
right.
died.
Right.
Is that what's going to happen at the end of the millennium? Michael's going to be standing there going, "Oh man, what did I do wrong?"
Mormon retrenched, though. It wasn't. He didn't actually lose per se. He just had to retreat a little bit and, you know, bury all the crap. And
well, and he had a shitty team. You got to give him.
They were all wicked. They wanted to eat people. Yeah.
He had the Clippers, and he was like Phil Jackson trying to coach the Clippers.
The Clippers.
Give him some credit. Cut him some slack.
And he was the last white guy around. I mean, sticks out like a sore thumb. I mean,
that's true.
Well, the black guy always dies first in the movie, so.
Yeah, not in the Book of Mormon. They win.
Yeah, yeah.
They win. So those are our 19 parallels. What else do you guys want to say about this?
I would not recommend this movie to anyone.
Oh, my gosh, I would.
You totally. No, man, this is.
This is must-see stuff. Every believer should watch this and have to struggle with it.
The only reason why you should watch it is if you want your own... You know, Mystery Science Theater 3000 moment where you can make lots of good commentary.
What I thought would be a good idea with this movie is if any of our listeners get like a book from Deseret Book for Christmas that they don't want, you know, and then all you can do with it is take it back and exchange it for something. Exchange it for this movie and then do it in a white elephant gift exchange to someone else.
Yes.
Well, and they said the only thing that can really protect us from this stuff is the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
That's actually right. Almost verbatim what they said. Well, and it's, you hear it at conference. In fact, one of the main things that they went and interviewed all these young, naive, but probably really intelligent BYU students.
Yes,
is they kept saying how evil the world is. The world's just really evil. Well, of course they'd think that because any general conference, just pick one, pick any talk, and they're going to talk about how evil the world is becoming.
Well, you do have the whole homosexuality thing, and you know,
in Modern Family. So.
Will and Grace, Modern Family, yeah. And the Book of Mormon does say, I don't think they use this quote. So they kind of missed one, but the Book of Mormon says that when the majority of the people choose wickedness, that's when you know that you're ripe for destruction.
So if we choose gay marriage, we're headed to destruction.
It's one of the signs. I mean, if I'm remembering it right, that's Mormon specifically talking to those of us reading in our day. How do we know when we're living in the last days? It's when the voice of the people, the majority, is choosing wickedness.
Well, I guess Delaware is just going to like fall off into the Atlantic there, right?
It could be nuclear. Mm. Or AIDS, you know, some plague.
AIDS, the one that they have pretty much cured and like almost entirely under control in the West now. Yeah, that's not going anywhere.
Yeah, nice try, God.
Yeah.
Science 1, God 0.
All right.
Anybody for the closing prayer?
Perfect. I was hoping so.
And I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. Shit, hope you had that out.